There's a remarkable passage in the Gemara in Masach Shabbos. The Gemara comments that Ein lo like Kodesh Baruch Hu ba'olamo ela yirah shamayim bilvad. As it were, the only thing which is of value to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this vast cosmos that he created and sustains is yirah shamayim. The Gemara quotes as its proof text, Va'ato Yisrael Mo Hashem Lokech HaShoim Eimach Kiyim L'Yirah. What does HaKadosh Baruch Hu want of you? He wants Yirah Shamayim. And then the Gemara juxtaposes a pasuk from Sefer Iyov of Hein Yiras Hashem Hi Chochma. And the Gemara says that Hein in Greek means one. So there's something singular and unique about Yirah Shamayim, that if you remove Yirah Shamayim, so what's left, kaviyochol, as it were, is of no interest, is of no significance in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's eyes. So what Chazal are telling us is that Yirah Shamayim is a foundational, fundamental mitzvah. It's the foundation on which everything else rests. And that's why if you remove the foundation, so then there's nothing left. You take away the foundation of the building, there's nothing left. Let's begin by just reviewing in outline form what we mean by Yirah Shamayim. So as you know, The Sfarim all distinguish between two types of Yira. There's one type of Yira, Yira Sa'onesh, that a person has a sense of accountability, right? The 11th of the Rambam's 13 Animamins, Animamin Be'emun Ashlema Sha'abayis Baruch Shemel Gomel Tov L'Shomrei Mitzvosav U'ma'anish La'ovei Mitzvosav. So we believe wholeheartedly, Be'emunah Shlema, that we're accountable. We're accountable to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for how we live our lives, for what we perceive as the big things in life, and what we perceive as the little things in life. So we live with a sense of accountability. And Yiras Onesh means to have that the fear which that accountability engenders. I don't know if your parents have ever been audited their tax returns, so then you get a little bit nervous. You do your best to fill it out honestly, accurately, truthfully, but if you know you're being audited, so it's a little unnerving. So Yiras Onesh, that's one type of Yira, that's one level of Yira Shamayim, the fear, Yiras Onesh, the fear of punishment for any sins, Rachmanu Litzlan, which we don't set straight through tshuva. Then the Sfarim tell us that there's another level of Yira, Yiras HaRamumus. In this context, Yira is not translated fear, as it is in the context of Yiras HaOnesh, but it's better translated as a sense of awe. A sense of awe because of HaKadosh Baruch, who is so exalted. He's so awesome that it engenders or should engender within us a sense of awe before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam in his Sefer HaMitzvahs formulates Yiras HaOnesh, Lira Bias Onsho B'chol Eis, to be afraid of punishment for various not set straight by tshuva. And then in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, the Rambam talks about Yiras HaRamumus. He talks about Bishar Sheyisbonin Ha'odam B'masa V'ubuav Hanifloim. When a person reflects upon the extraordinary, wondrous creation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so he realizes, the person realizes, he or she realizes, is that Hu Birya Shvela V'afela Omedes B'das Kala Lifnei Tzmim Deyos. A person realizes within the when he glimpses a reflection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's infinite wisdom, so he realizes what a small, puny creature he, she is, with such meager and limited understanding, and miyadhu nirtala chorav, and the person recoils in just overcome, overwhelmed with that sense of awe. So those are two levels or two dimensions of Yiras Shamayim. This past Shabbos, the Shabbos Mevorchen, so when we bench Rosh Chodesh, so we asked for Chaim Sheyesh Bem Yiras Shamayim veYiras Chait. So what does Yiras Chait mean as distinct from Yiras Shamayim? Isn't it just that Yiras Shamayim expresses itself in Yiras Chait? If we have a proper Yiras Shamayim, so then that translates into Yiras Chait. So there's a little Musar Sefer from Chaim Kanievsky, Orchos Yosher, and he explains there that what the phrase Yiras Chait means as distinct from Yiras Shamayim is, maybe we'll just give a moshel first to what he says. Let's say, imagine that there's a live wire somewhere. A live wire falls down. And everyone's admonished not to touch the wire. So the fear that we have of touching the wire is not only because we'll be breaking the rules, not only because there's an injunction against touching the wire, but we realize that just inherently, intrinsically, it's something dangerous, it's something destructive. If we're told, don't eat that food, it may be contaminated. So we're inhibited not only because we've been given a directive, not only because we've been prohibited from eating it, but because we recognize that just inherently, intrinsically, it's something that could be a source of food poisoning. So Chaim Kanievsky explains that Yira Shamaya means that when we have a sense of Yira, not to violate what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. But there's an even higher level, which is to recognize that whenever HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us not to do something, it's in the moshol, so it's like staying. It's like telling us to stay away from the live wire. It's comparable to telling us to stay away from the food which has been contaminated. And that's what Yiras Chait means, that the person, again, has a fear of Chait, as though Chait were a recognizing that Chait is a spiritual toxin, that it's a spiritual poison. So when we talk about Yira, again, we can talk about Yira Sa'onesh, we can talk about Yira Sa'romimus, both of those under the heading of Yira Shamayim, and then additionally, we also talk about Yira Schait. And that's what the Gemara tells us, that this is something which is foundational, it's fundamental. David HaMelech also says, right, Reishis Chochma Yira Sa'shem, the basis, the foundation for everything is Yira Sa'shem. All of which leaves us wondering. I don't know, we hear lots of shiurim, drashas, sichos, shmuzen about important central topics in Yahadus. We hear about the tefillah, we hear about Shabbos, we hear about many things. Could be I'm mistaken. But kimedume, that we don't hear very much talk about Yiras Shamayim. So how is that? How is that? It's foundational. It couldn't be more fundamental to life, to everything. It's a pretty powerful statement. Ein lo la'kodesh baruch hu ba'olamo ela Yiras Shamayim bilvad. David HaMelech's statement, Reishis Chochma Yiras Hashem. And yet, I don't know, we hear lots of very important and discussions, but somehow the spotlight isn't on Yiras Shamayim. So one suspects that the reason for that is that Western culture frowns upon fear. Maybe that's even too weak a formulation. Maybe the more accurate formulation is it demonizes fear. And the reason for that is that Western culture probably very much under the influence of modern psychology, sees fear as something which is antithetical to happiness. And happiness is it's the idol of Western culture, right? The inalienable, God-given right to life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. So if fear is something which is antithetical to happiness, because how can you be happy and frightened simultaneously? So then we need to banish fear. That conception of fear then has shaped in the popular Western mind, and unfortunately too much in our minds as well, the notion of religion. And religion is then restructured and reimagined as something which just makes us feel good. And not only is that the end result of religion, but every step along the way has to measure up to that standard of, does it make me feel good? And if reflecting on the possibility of onesh, rachmana litzlan, for everything I did wrong, for which I don't do tshuva, doesn't make me feel very good. It doesn't engender happiness. So it's not something we focus on. But yet in Yahadus, so Yiras Hashem is a mitzvah aseh, and moreover, it's the foundational mitzvah. So what does that mean? Does that mean that Yahadus disavows simcha? That we're not supposed to be besimcha? That we're not supposed to be happy? We should skip from Chodesh Shvat to Chodesh Nisan. So obviously we know that's not true. And not only does Yahadus allow for simcha, it insists on simcha. There's a famous passage in the Rambam at the end of Hilchos Lulav, where the Rambam says, where the Rambam writes that Hasimcha sheyismach ha'odam ba'asiyas ha'mitzvos uba'avos ha'kel shetzivo v'hen avodah gedolei. The simcha, the joy, the happiness that a person should experience in fulfilling mitzvahs, and the sense of ahava that one should have HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who commanded these mitzvahs, is a very, very great form of service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chol ha'moneya atzmo ro'i lihipar mimenu. I skipped a word or two there. And someone who holds himself or herself back from experiencing that simcha is to be held accountable. And then the Rambam proceeds to quote David HaMelech's response to Michal as to why he was dancing so ecstatically in front of the Oron together with all the other Jews. So how do we then reconcile, how do we integrate Yira and Simcha? So let's begin perhaps by trying to define simcha. And then we'll follow up in Yitzhak Shambli Nether with a reflection upon Yira and try to see how the picture looks then. I think in Western culture, simcha, or happiness, is understood as if one can live a life which is carefree, no worries, no burdens, one can indulge oneself, one can gratify whatever wishes, desires one has, that composite, that's a good life, that's a happy life. carefree, no worries, no burdens, to be able to live indulgently. How do we define simcha? So the Mishnah tells us at the end of Brachos that Chayav Adam Levarach Al Eroa Kishem Shem Levarach Al Hatova. That a person, Rachman Al Etzlan, makes a bracha on bad tidings the same way one makes a bracha on good tidings. So if a person receives good tidings that affect, again, not only the person hearing it, but someone else as well, so the bracha is Hatova Hametiv. Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Hatova Hametiv. Rachman Al Etzlan, if one receives bad tidings, let's say one of the seven immediate relatives is informed of the passing of an immediate relative, so the bracha is Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, Dayan HaEmes. So it's not the same bracha. So what does it mean, Kishem? So the Gemara says that both brachos, both the bracha of Hatova Hametiv, you win the lottery, and you and a partner buy a ticket together, you win the lottery. And Rachman al Etzlan, the bracha of Dayan HaEmes, are both said, L'kibulinhu b'simcha. You're supposed to say both brachos b'simcha. So what does that mean, Dayan HaEmes b'simcha? So Rashi says, Rashi comments on that Gemara in Masachas Brachos and says, L'kibulinu b'simcha, to receive the tidings. B'simcha, Rashi says two words, B'lev of Shalem, wholeheartedly. So Rashi gives us a profound definition of simcha. Simcha is this deep seated, profound sense of serenity and menuchas hanefesh, which comes from knowing that things are as they should be. That what is, should be. What is, ought to be. Now, whether or not external factors surrounding us are as they ought to be, that's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's province. That's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when one receives a Rachman al Etzlan, a bad tiding, so the emunah that Hatzor Tomim Paolo Kichol Drachav Mishma, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is perfect, and that what he does is perfect, and that what he does is supposed to be, should be. So a person is not, we wouldn't use the word happy, that's not the right word. The person is not joyous, but there is this sense of simcha in the sense of belev of shalem, that the person has the menuchas hanefesh, all the pain and anguish notwithstanding, of knowing that things are as they should be. But to be besimcha, so not only do external factors have to be as they should be, but internal factors have to be as they should be also. It's up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he does his share, that I can be besimcha about everything around me. So that's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu ensures that what happens around me, what happens to me, is as it should be. But in order for me to be besimcha, I also need to know that what I do, which is up to me, which is subject to my free will, in order for me to be besimcha, so I need to know that I'm living the way I ought to be living. To go to sleep at night with a smile on my face, with this sense of serenity, I need to know that the way I lived this day of my life was good and proper and real and genuine. So that's what simcha is. Simcha is not this, again, superficial, carefree, indulgent life, but simcha is the serenity and the menuchas hanefesh of knowing that things are as they should be and that I'm living as I should be. I'm doing what I should be. Another supplementary, or maybe it's really just a deeper understanding, but another perspective on Simcha. The Gemara in Moed Katan records the halacha that when there's a clash between Avelus Rachmana Litzlan and Yom Tov, let's say a person began sitting Shiva Rachmana Litzlan a couple of days before Yom Tov, so then when that clash happens, so then Yom Tov wins out and the Shiva is terminated. Or if Rachmana Litzlan, let's say that the clash materializes in a different way, let's say a person passes away and is buried on Chol HaMoed, so now, again, Yom Tov prevails and the Shiva is postponed. So either way, whenever there's a clash between Yom Tov and Avelus, so the Gemara tells us that Yom Tov prevails. So Rav Soloveitchik asks a fascinating question. He says, but there's one thing the Gemara just takes for granted, axiomatically, and doesn't really explain to us. Who says there's a clash? Let's say for men. So what's the normative expression of Simcha and Yom Tov? The normative expression of Simcha and Yom Tov for a man is he eats meat and drinks wine. That's the normative expression of Simcha for a man on Yom Tov. And Avel Rachmana Litzlan is allowed to eat meat and drink wine. At an earlier stage, between Rachmana Litzlan, the passing of a relative, and the burial, when a person is not in Avel, but a person is in Onain, so then Bosa V'Yayana are prohibited. But immediately after Kruva, as soon as the burial is complete, excuse me, and the person is no longer an Onain, a person is now an Avel, so consumption of Bosa V'Yayin is permissible. So why is there a clash? Why do we take for granted that there's a clash between Yom Tov and Avelus, and then we rule in favor of Yom Tov? The two can coexist. So the Rav explains very, very famously that both Simchas Yom Tov as well as Avelus, the nihugim, the practices associated, are just expressions of an inner, emotional, psychological mindset and frame of mind. And yes, a man eats meat and drinks wine, but that's only intended as an expression, as an objective, external expression of an inner sense of simcha. And similarly, everything that an avel, all the restrictions of avelus, the avel doesn't wash, and so many other 11 core halachas of Shiva. Also, that's not the essence, the core of the avelus. That's the expression of the avelus. But the essence, the core of the avelus, again, is this inner state. And the clash, the incompatibility between Avelus and Yom Tov is not on the practical level, but is on that inner level, on the experiential level. Okay, so now let's be more explicit, more precise. So Simchas Yom Tov, what experience is being objectified, is being expressed? So the Rav says a feeling of lifnei Hashem, usmachtem lifnei Hashem. That on Yom Tov, a person is lifnei Hashem, and that being lifnei Hashem engenders, that closeness, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, engenders simcha in a person. Avelus Rachmana Litzlan, so a person feels as though he's a menuda. A person feels, as it were, as though HaKadosh Baruch Hu has pushed him or her away. A person feels distant and distanced from Hashem, Rachmana Litzlan. Those two, on that level, so Simchas Yom Tov and Avelus can't coexist. For our purposes, what we want to extract from that very, very beautiful insight of the Rav is another perspective on Simcha, is that Simcha is that feeling which envelops a person when he or she feels, experiences, is Lifnei Hashem. Now, let's reflect for a moment on Yira, and then we'll try to come back and understand the interplay and the complementarity of Yira and Simcha within our worldview. Well, let's reflect for a moment on Yira, but maybe we'll begin with a mashal. I don't know how it is today. It's been a very long time, but when I took driver's ed, long time ago. So part of Driver's Ed was that we watched a film. And in that film, we saw horrific scenes of car crashes. I still remember some of the images. And then on the screen, on the film, were flashed basic facts and figures, names of victims, and their age. And obviously the ages were mostly upper teens. In Massachusetts, where I grew up, so you could get a license at age 16 and a half. 16-year-olds, 17, 18, 19, maybe some of them, they had the facts and figures. They had people in their low 20s. So what was the point of the film? So obviously the point of the film was to impress upon new drivers the responsibility that comes with getting behind the wheel, realizing what's at stake, to be attuned, to be in touch with the reality of what's involved in taking the controls in sitting behind the wheel and driving. So fear, let's say you buy an electric appliance. You buy an electric appliance, so it gives instructions how to use it properly. It also cautions what constitutes improper use. And it also says what can happen, Rahman al-Itzlan, if that appliance is used improperly. So what's the role of fear in both of those scenarios? It's something very healthy. What it means is to be in touch with reality, to be attuned, to be able to... It enables us to relate to and act appropriately, to be in touch with reality. Fear certainly is an inhibiting factor. It certainly does generate inhibition, but that's not always a bad thing either. I'm not sure how many of us, that every single impulse within us is so pristine and so noble that we don't benefit from a degree of inhibition. Right? If you've ever had the misfortune of seeing someone drunk and seeing sometimes the inappropriate speech or behavior that can result. So it's a reminder that inhibition is not always something negative. Inhibition can be very healthy because there are things within us that are best suppressed and best inhibited. So in light of the understanding of simcha. Simcha is either belev of shalem, simcha is lifnei Hashem. The function of yira is to have a realistic relationship. To have a realistic relationship. So, yira and simcha not only can coexist, but the truth is that yira provides the foundation for genuine simcha. If a person doesn't have yira shamayim, there's no way a person goes to sleep at night with that profound menuchas hanefesh of my life, I'm living my life the way it should be lived. There's no way a person, the genuineness, the authenticity, the goodness, the truthfulness is not going to be there if a person doesn't have yira shamayim. There's no basis, there's no foundation for simcha. If a person doesn't have yira shamayim, how can a person have any closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? That understanding of simcha also can't be present without yira. Now, there is a passage in one of the Midrashim, in the Tana Devei Eliyahu. It's much quoted in Hasidic literature, and it 6 words that yirasi mitoch simchasi, simchasi mitoch yirasi. The Tana Devei Eliyahu says that yira and simcha nourish each other; they feed off each other. The yira, again, as we just tried to understand a little bit, the yira provides the foundation for simcha. It allows, again, if you take driver's ed and you learn the lesson of the film and you drive responsibly, so then you can enjoy it. It enables. By inhibiting, it enables. Ultimately, what it does is enable. It enables the simcha. And the simcha brings a person closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so a person feels more yira. And it's a never-ending upward cycle. Let's try to maybe understand a little bit more, a little bit better, the coexistence of yira and simcha. Call it prudence or call it cowardice. I've never been on a roller coaster. I personally prefer to think of it as prudence, but some people think of it as cowardice. But I've never been on a roller coaster, but I've been to an amusement park, and I've seen people on roller coasters, and what one sees is people shrieking with fear and delight. No, is that's what you see? They're screaming, and you can't separate out the. You can't separate out the fear from the delight from the fear. So somehow or other, sometimes fear and again, this is the delight spiking, sometimes they do coexist. How do they coexist? Because apparently in the Bria, there are some things which just inspire both. And even if logically, when we think about it, they seem to be, if not contradictory, there seems to be a tension. But the reality is, there are things in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, and again, forgive the triviality of the mashal, of the example, but think of the example of the roller coaster. There are things that simultaneously inspire both. coming back to the Rambam that we mentioned before, in the second chapter of Yisodei HaTorah, so the Rambam says something remarkable. The Rambam says, Ketzad hi ha-derech la-ahavoso v'yiroso. How is a person inspired to look, to try to cultivate and develop, on the one hand, Ahavas Hashem, Ahavas Hashem closely linked to Simcha, on the other hand, to cultivate and develop Yiras Hashem. The Rambam says, again, the lines we mentioned before, but before I sort of edited out a little bit, B'shar she'yizbon in od v'masa v'bu'a v'anifloim. When a person reflects on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's handiwork, on His creation, how wondrous they are, v'yir mehem chochmaso she'ein la'erech v'ein la'keitz. The chochma is chochma that can't be, you can't even assess it. It defies assessment. Ein la erech, the value, it can't be assessed. Ein la keitz, it's endless. It's open ended, infinite. Miyad hu ohev u'mishabeach u'mefoyer u'misav'etav gedai u'leva Hashem Baruch Hu. Right away, immediately, what's one's reaction? It's an instinctive reaction. Miyad, it's an instinctive reaction. It's not a, doesn't have to be a deliberate, premeditated decision. Miyad, hu ohev, hu mishabeach, hu mefoyer. A person is enthralled. A person is praising. A person is glorifying HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mis'av etayva gedola, and is overcome with this tremendous tshuka, this tremendous yearning to come closer to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Rambam continues. U'kishemchashev b'dvarim ha'evil atzman, when a person reflects on these very same phenomena, when a person reflects on the very same experience, impression of chochmoso she'ein la'erech ve'ein la'keitz, is miyad hu nirta la'achorav. He recoils v'yira v'yafached, and he's trembling. He's overcome by the awe, terrified by the awesomeness, v'yodeya shu bir yaktana shfela afela. And he realizes what a puny creature he or she is. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe whether we get it logically or not, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just the nimshal to the roller coaster mashal, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu inspires, he elicits, on the one hand, Ahava, Simcha, on the other hand, Yira. So to sort of sum up until now, it certainly would not be correct, it would be a gross mischaracterization, it would be a distortion, a wholesale distortion, to describe Yahadus as a religion of fear. It certainly is not. But Me'idach Gisa, Yira is something foundational. Yira is the foundation of life. Yiras Hashem is the, Behei HaYediya, is the foundation of life. A foundation which allows for a person to experience and enjoy and be energized and exhilarated by the simcha, which is so central to one's life, to one's avodas Hashem. So maybe just for a few more minutes, let's reflect on how we can try to implement this a little bit. How does a person attain Yiras Hashem? The Ramah, at the very beginning of Shulchan Aruch, it's the first comment of the first gloss of the Ramah in Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Aleph of Arachayim, he's paraphrasing or quoting, I'm not sure exactly what translation he had, something the Rambam says at the end of the Morah. He talks about Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somed. Anyway, some people attribute this paragraph to the Rambam in the Morah, some people attribute it to Yisrael Williger, but either way, this is, either way, it's Gufei Torah. That Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somed, who Klal Godol, V'Torah V'Mailos HaTzadikim. David HaMelech says, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somed, Kodesh Baruch Hu is always before me. I place HaKodesh Baruch Hu Neged, V'Yichan Yisham Yisrael Neged Ahor. Here's Hasina, here's where B'nai Yisrael camped. Neged Ahor, right opposite. Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Somed, I place HaKodesh Baruch Hu before me always. Who Klal Godol, the reality, if a person lives that way, so who Klal Godol v'mailos haTorah v'tzadikim haHolchem lifnei Elokim Tomid. This is a defining, orienting principle in life. Why? Because you can't, says the Rambam, quoting from the Rambam, Ein yeshivas ha'odom utznuoso v'dibur v'halchoves piv v'hu levado b'veso. The way we conduct ourselves when we have the benefit of being in private quarters, so we're relaxed. So the way we sit, more informally, the way we act, not necessarily on our best behavior, we don't feel that pressure to be on our best behavior all the time as one would on an interview, say. And even diburo v'hachavas piv, even how we choose our words, whether we prattle. You can't compare the way a person conducts himself or herself or hulavado beveso as if the person were b'moshav hamelech. The king invites one to sit down, so one doesn't sit down leaning back like this. You sort of sit very straight and rigid, and one's words are carefully chosen and measured. Diburo v'hachavas piv. One's words are carefully chosen and measured. Says the Rambam, again, paraphrasing, quoting the Rambam, that kol shekein kishayosim ha'odam el libo, Shehamelech HaGodol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Asher Melo Chol HaOretz Kevodo Omed Ola V'Roa B'Masa. If a person will only take to mind, take to heart, if a person will only internalize that we're always B'Moshe HaMelech, we're always in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, now listen to these next four words, Miyad Yagia Elav HaYira. Immediately, naturally, instinctively, a person will have Yiras Hashem. So there's a tremendous insight here. Tremendous insight. A life changer. What the Rambam is telling us, again, coming from the Rambam, is that if a person has proper beliefs, we do, Baruch Hashem, Chaste Hashem, a person believes in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah, and believes that la'acha me'er ve'esrem, there's a din v'cheshbon. Ani ma'amim be'emunah shleima, she'abo yisbar shemol gomol tov l'shomim mitzvosav, u'manish lovei mitzvosav. If a person has those proper beliefs, so then the challenge is just not to be distracted. A person doesn't have to work on having Yiras Hashem. Yiras Hashem is the most natural, instinctive reaction. The reason we struggle so mightily to have Yiras Hashem is because we're distracted from the reality. We're distracted from the reality. If I'm driving on the road, on a country, on a winding country road, and I realize that there's no guardrail, and I realize how close I am to the edge, so that awareness, you don't have to tell me to be careful. You don't have to tell me to be responsible. You don't have to tell me to act accountably. I'm aware of it. I'm aware of it. I don't have to work on, well, how am I going to cultivate that sense of responsibility? No, it just comes naturally. Miyad yagia elav hayira means that if only we're not distracted, so then that healthy fear, the healthy fear, the enabling fear, the fear that's the foundation of tachas shalavat shalmekachu besimcha, it just comes from being in touch with reality, the ultimate reality, that we're always in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then our question now has changed, right? So the question is no longer how do we cultivate, how do we directly cultivate Yiras Shamayim, but the question has now morphed into how do we keep from being distracted? How do we keep from losing touch with that reality, the ultimate reality of being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So we're not going to be comprehensive, but mention three reminders which are built into our lives, which can be built into our lives. That the Rambam says at the beginning of Hilchos Brachos, he says, why did Chazal inundate us with brachos? Whenever you turn around, it's time to say a bracha again. Chazal inundated us with brachos. He says, what? Why? Why? So he says, "Kidei lizkoros habarei tamid." Because if we say brachos properly, that if is in capital, bold, italics. If we say brachos properly, so Baruch Atah. So who's Atah? You. We're talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the second person. Right? I could only talk to you in the second person if you're right here. If you're in front of me, I can talk to you in the second person. If you're down the block, I can talk about you in the third person. I can't talk to you in the second person. I can only talk in the second person if you're here. So if we would make brachos properly, says the Rambam, what's achieved is lizkos habarei tamid. And that's why Chazal are helping us. Chazal, the constant, right, seemingly never-ending list of brachos and occasions for bracha, is that we shouldn't drift. Is that we should have these constant reminders built in. Baruch Atah Hashem. One reminder that can be built into our lives. Another reminder. Tznius is something which occupies a pivotal role for men and women, but is obviously even more accentuated in the life of a woman. So what does tznius reflect? What's the underlying experience, awareness, mindset of tznius? Again, tznius in behavior, tznius in dress, tznius in its broad sense. So there's a very, very strange, very strange Gemara in Maseches Brachos. When it tells a story that Hahu Saftana, that was a eulogizer, was eulogizing someone who had died, and he said in his hesped, the person was very tzanua. So the Gemara says that Rav Nachman accosted him, I think it was Rav Nachman accosted him and said, how do you know whether he was tzanua? Did you ever spy on that person in the Beis HaKisei, in the bathroom? Strange Gemara. So what in the world? And then the Gemara quotes a Braisa that in Korin Tzanua, a person can only be described as Tzanua if that individual is Tzanua in the bathroom. So what does that mean? So what that Gemara is telling us is that we make a mistake. We think that the audience which demands tznius is people. I have to be tzanua because other people are around. I have to, there's a certain privacy, a certain dignity that has to be upheld. There's a certain reserve. There's a certain, things have to be hidden. That's part of the dignity. That's part of that dignified reserve because other people are around. The Gemara says, no, that's all wrong. That's not what's driving tznius. Ultimately, what drives tznius is that it's an expression of an awareness of being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why am I acting with that reserve? Why am I acting with that reserve, again, which expresses Kedusha and Tahara? Why? Because I realize I'm in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what that seemingly, again, strange comment of Rav Nachman of the Vaisa. It's only if you can spy on a person when that person thinks that he or she is not being seen by human eyes. When that person thinks that he or she has the comfort and guarantee of absolute privacy, if the person is tsanua then as well, then you know that person is genuinely tsanua. Because clearly what's fueling the tznius, what's driving the tznius, again, is the sense of reserve which the overwhelming presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu engenders. Imagine if right now in the middle of our conversation. So imagine that a great person would walk into the room. So right away, we'd stop talking. Everything would stop because it's inappropriate, that recoiling, that inhibition is an appropriate reaction to the presence of greatness. So what tznius really, really is designed to express is an awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So now, when a person acts, again, dresses, one's whole demeanor is one of tznius. So when we understand what tznius is intended to express, it's a reminder. So why can't I be more ostentatious in my behavior? Why am I being understated? Why do I look to conduct myself in a self-effacing way? Why? If one understands what the tznius expresses, so then it's a very, very powerful, constant reminder of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's sort of they reinforce each other. The presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu engenders the tznius-tik comportment, the tznius-tik demeanor, and the tznius-tik demeanor is a reminder of being in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Finally, and again, this list is by no means comprehensive or exhaustive, but maybe just three things for us to think about. The famous Igeres HaRamban. So Ramban tells his son, he says, always talk softly. Always talk softly. He says, if you always talk softly, he says, ubozeh tinotzel min hakas. He says, if a person trains himself, herself, to talk softly, so then that will preempt kas. How does talking softly preempt kas? Because talking softly means that there's a certain cap, I think on your car, if you want, so you can set it that the speedometer cannot exceed a certain miles per hour. So you can set it that if you don't trust yourself, so you can set it that you can put a cap that the car just can't go, the engine can't go more than 65 or 70 or whatever miles per hour. The person trains himself, herself, to talk softly, so that means there's a certain, again, healthy cap in terms of there's a certain discipline of emotion. Anger means when emotion gets the better of us. That's what anger, a person only succumbs to anger when emotion overwhelms us, when it gets the better of us. So the Ramban says, talking softly, he says, avoids kaas. He says, when a person avoids kaas, so then a person has a sense of that, again, that discipline of I have to be measured. I have to be careful. That instills within a person a sense of anava, a sense of yira, and then the Ramban says, you're on your way. So three reminders that can be, that are built into our lives to help us cultivate, to help us inculcate that foundational yira, all the while realizing that the yira is simchasi mitoch yirasi, is that the yira is a healthy yira. It's a yira that serves as a foundation, as a platform for living a life of simcha, a real, genuine life of simcha, where a person always has this sense of menuchas hanefesh, of living the way life is supposed to be lived, doing what's supposed to be done, and being Ovid Hashem b'simcha.